Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, June 20th. I'm Alan Chartok. On Sunday, the American military shot down the first Syrian warplane since the civil war erupted in Syria 6 years ago. The action has prompted condemnation from Russia, the latest in tensions with the United States. Here to discuss what's happening with Syria and its ramifications is Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University at Albany. He knows what he's talking about, folks. We also want to hear from you, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, Dr. Steiner, who knows all about it. Your calls and emails coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Long-running tensions between the U.S. and Russia erupted publicly on Monday as Moscow condemned the American military's downing of a Syrian warplane and threatened to target aircraft flown by the U.S. and its allies. The Russians also said they had suspended their use of the hotline that the American and Russian militaries used to avoid collisions of their aircraft in Syrian airspace. The episode was the first time the United States downed a Syrian plane since civil war began there in 2011. It came after the jet dropped bombs on Sunday near American-backed fighters combating the Islamic State terrorist group. Here to discuss what is happening, and are we lucky to have him, is Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University of Albany. Jim is the school's program coordinator for Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Emergency Management. He served in the CIA from 72 to 2005, focusing on Soviet defense and economic issues. In other words, folks, you couldn't have a better guy on the air today. In the 1990s, Jim served in the State Department as special advisor to the ambassador at large for Russia and the former Soviet states. Jim, Professor, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Delighted to be back, Al.
The number to call, everybody, is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Jim, some interesting things have happened just minutes ago.
That's right, Alan. Just to give you and the listeners an update, earlier today, the U.S. shot down a Syrian armed forces drone. And on the other side, Russia harassed one of our reconnaissance aircraft up in the Baltic. And just about half an hour ago, Russia Ministry of Defense in Moscow announced that U.S. aircraft would be deemed targets. Not exactly clear what that means, but what is clear is that this is ratcheting up. Alan, you recall last time I was here, I mentioned that that was in April, right after we had launched the Tomahawk missiles in retaliation for the Syrian use of chemical weapons. I had noted that it was one thing to look at the combat now. We were working fairly well alongside, not with, but alongside the Russians, essentially doing different things. We were going after ISIS. They were going after rebel forces. But I cautioned that the real danger was going to come when we started winning against ISIS, especially in Raqqa. Mosul's pretty well cleared, less than 10% left, but now the focus is on Raqqa. And what's going to happen is more and more different forces on the land and in the air are going to start operating in close proximity. It would be nice if all these forces were there solely to destroy ISIS and ISIS fighters. But the reality is we are there to go after ISIS. The others there would like to destroy ISIS, but what they really want is to control the territory. And we have Syria apparently has made a strategic decision to try to reclaim more of its territory. Iranians are in country, having come across from Iraq. And in fact, another thing that happened in the last few days is Iran fired three ballistic missiles into Syria. Meanwhile, the U.S. is there with our coalition partners, as well as the Syrian Democratic Forces, who we support. Once again, there will be an end game around Raqqa, But then it's going to be who's going to control what territory.
Wow. Well, that's quite a summation for now. We'll go to Sam in Woodstock, okay? Sam, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, Sam. Hi. Thanks for having me on. And I have to say, I think we are being lied into another war for regime change. All right? I'm not sure who your guest is, but...
Well, he's quite an expert. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Is he one of the people that lied us into the war in Iraq? Is he one of the people that lied us into a bombing campaign in Libya where we destroyed the country of Libya, by the way, killing something like 30,000 civilians in our bombing? All right, we have demonized Russia, so we're closing off the only way to actually bring this conflict to an end, which is talk to Russia. We talked to Stalin, we talked to Khrushchev, we talked to Brezhnev. There's absolutely no reason. What the Americans are doing right now is that they can't overthrow Damascus, so their only option is to continue the war. That's what they want to do. And let me make at least one more point.
Okay, make it short because Assad, you've made quite a point. Yeah, go ahead.
Assad is the one protecting the religious minorities in Syria. Those are the Orthodox Christians, those are the Alawites, and we are supposed to believe now that the people that the U.S. are backing are supposed to be the good guys, when those guys have, up until very recently, been working hand in hand with al-Nusra and with ISIS.
Okay, all Sam, right, so Sam, whoa, 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 Sam, Sam, me moderator, you not. Okay, there's a period there, and the guest will now respond. Guest.
Well, you have touched a key issue, which is what is the U.S. mission in Syria? And our declared mission has nothing to do with regime change. Our declared issue in Syria is to destroy ISIS. And that's what we're in the process of doing. The question is, what happens next? Should the U.S. just pull out and let Russia and Iran and Assad eliminate the opposition? Or should we do something else? I'm not here to suggest a policy. In fact, one of the major tenets of being an intelligence officer in the U.S. is you don't define policy. You try to help policymakers' decision by speaking truth to power. And frankly, what's going to happen in Syria is going to be a bloodbath if we just pull out. But you can certainly make an argument that not our problem.
Now, what about Trump? What about Trump here?
That's not true, by the way.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That's not true.
What did I tell you? Hold on a second. Well, I'm asking a question. What about Trump? This is now got the Trump imprimatur on it, right?
Trump owns this. Trump is now the president. It is up to Trump, with the advice of his National Security Council, to decide what to do. The authorization, congressional authorization, for our forces operating in Syria is counterterrorism, not counterinsurgency, not regime change. It is unclear It is unclear exactly what Trump's policy is at this point.
Okay, but Sam made a point which I found interesting, which is, and I've said it many times before, that these people who are the supposed friends that we're supporting down there often turn out to be Osama bin Laden and others. How do we deal with that?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's an old saying in that part of the world: you don't have friends, you can't buy friends, you can only rent them. And that's what we do. We have rented friends, and they have supported us, and we've supported them. Let's think about northern Syria, northern Iraq, where the Kurds have been our most trustworthy allies, hard fighters, going after ISIS. If we walk away, what will happen to the Kurds? Is that our responsibility? You know, this is one of the reasons why I'm in intelligence and not policy.
And Sam, what do you think about the Kurd issue?
Well, the Kurds, the threat to the Kurds is not from Assad. The threat to the Kurds is from the Turks, who are theoretically our allies. By the way, I do want to point out two things. Number one, the United States is in violation of international law by being in Syria. All right, they were not requested. This is the president making a unilateral decision to go into Syria. All right, so we are in violation. And secondly, this is the problem with the demonization of Putin. Putin has tried to assemble a peace conference that could deal with the issues of what happens to the refugees, what happens to the people returning to their cities. This is something we should be talking about. And because we have demonized Putin, just like we have demonized Gaddafi, it gives us the right, in our minds, to do this incredible destruction. We are killing more.
Okay, okay,
more
Sam. Hey, Sam.
Than the Russians.
Hey, this isn't the Sam show. Come on, Professor. What do you got to say?
Well, first of all, anyone who would stand up for Putin as a striver for peace is being
Sam, no laughing down your nose on this program.
You don't understand Putin. Putin is a professional intelligence officer, born and bred, an operator. What he did to our elections using covert action tools, active measures, frankly, that's as naive as when George W. Bush said, "I looked into his eyes and I saw someone I could trust." That's what Putin does. Putin knows how to move public opinion, but he also uses covert action. I certainly think there's no way in the world we should trust Putin any further than we can throw him.
Okay, well, that's the end for this time on the air. We are now going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Blue Sky Bicycles, Saratoga Springs, New York, now offering electric bikes to the capital region, featuring pedal assist bikes with test rides available, blueskybicycles.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing, collegestreetmotors.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. The Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, presenting Pete M. Wire's iForest, an immersive sound installation in a wild forest, wildcenter.org for details. And the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, leading volunteers in collection of wild blue lupine seeds for use in Karner blue butterfly habitat restoration, ages 10 and up, albanypinebush.org.
And we are back, and I'm delighted to hear that we are. And we have Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs, policy at the university, Schools Program Coordinator for Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Emergency Management. He served in the agency, otherwise known as the CIA, from 1972 to 2005, focusing on Soviet defense and economic issues. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from all of you. And now we'll hear from Greg in Schenectady. All right, Greg, your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, gentlemen? My question, I've heard local academics and peace activists who have visited personally with Bashar Assad. This is back maybe 10 years ago before this war in Syria, and said that he was quite articulate and quite cordial and wanted to communicate with the United States government, but he was rejected as a black sheep, and he was, in fact, educated in America. And I just couldn't reconcile that. And, these are credible people, and I can believe credible people, I think, if they're local people and they have the background. I haven't been there myself. But as far as this Putin question, I've listened to Putin being interviewed, and he's quite articulate and intelligent, and he's asked the same questions. He said he would like to work with America and be treated as an equal partner, but he's vilified. And I've personally seen how, you know, we tend to vilify, you know, we call it the Russians are against us. Well, the Russians aren't against us. The governments are against each other. Our government is against their government and vice versa. So I'm trying to reconcile all this myself, and I am a proud American and all this, but I'm wondering really what's going on here.
Okay, let's take that as a question, Professor.
Sure, I'd be glad to take that on. Let's go back and think about Putin and Russia and the Soviet Union. We start out by accepting Putin's statement that from his perspective, the greatest disaster of the 20th century was the dissolution of the former Soviet Union. And in fact, his agenda is to make Russia a great power again, which is somewhat of a task given the size and capabilities. Remember that the GDP of Russia is about the same as Italy. So they box well above their weight right now. What is his agenda? Putin's agenda, especially in the Middle East, is first of all to retain control of his military facilities in Syria. His only port on the Mediterranean is in Syria. He also would like to reduce the U.S. profile in the Middle East. He's doing pretty well at that. And if you look at his broader perspective on the Middle East, he has two pillars, Iran and Syria, and he is essentially supporting both of them now within Syria. Let's look at what he is doing with regard to our allies in Europe, where a major covert action, that is essentially an act to try to reduce the unity of Europeans by having essentially elect governments that do not want a unified Europe. Because a weak Europe is very much in Russia's favor. It makes them more dominant. And what he has done is directed a major covert action, that is trying to change the internal political situation. He's done it in France. He's trying to do it in Germany. He's worked at it in the UK, and he's obviously done it to us. So Putin and Russia are
doing the same thing, by the way, internationally.
I didn't understand you. Say what?
Yeah, we're also doing the same thing internationally. We're interfering in elections and government and the CIA and all that.
Okay, Jim, you were in the agency, right?
Right.
Did they do that when you were there?
Well, I was there a long time, and I'm not speaking for the agency at this point. I want to make that very clear. It depends what your perspective are. During the Cold War, you got to remember that we were promoting democracy, we were promoting human rights, and we were promoting market governments. And it was a Cold War, not a hot war. The idea was essentially containment. We needed to contain the former Soviet Union until it imploded from within. And we won that. It took us 40 years. Along the way to doing that, the CIA engaged in a number of activities which we would not normally engage in. There were changes in governments. We undertook major operations in Afghanistan, supporting the Mujahideen. That came back to haunt us. Covert action is a very tricky tool. We use it. We have very strict limits on when it can be used. It has to be proposed by the policy side of the House, not by intelligence. It is a legitimate tool of U.S. foreign policy. It falls somewhere between using diplomats and sending in military forces. So, yes, we use covert action.
So why is it legitimate for us but not for them?
Well, I didn't say it wasn't legitimate for them to do it, but I'm saying they are doing it to us. It is a legitimate tool in the sense that it's an intelligence tool, but that doesn't mean you sit back and you take it. You push back. You make it clear who's behind it. Because at the crux, what covert action is really all about is taking actions without acknowledging that your government is doing it. Okay? And that's what Putin's trying to do in Europe. He's trying to make Europeans think that it's internal European dynamics that is causing problems when they are actually causing some of the problems.
Okay, Greg, we're running out of time. Do you want to come back one more time?
What about Assad? How come he wants to talk to America, and how come America would never talk to him?
Well, you should look a little more deeply at Assad. He's very smooth. He's a good talker. His father was, too. Don't forget about those barrel bombs that the Syrian military has been using on children. Don't forget about the hospitals that have been attacked by Syrian military forces. There are rules of engagement in wars, and Assad is not following those.
But it's a bit.
What are the rules that allowed us to go into Syria and to take action in a country without any request?
We were not going after the Syrian government. We are going after ISIS terrorists who have conducted attacks in this country and in our allied countries. And if their government cannot make that happen, then we will.
But we made it clear, did we not, that Assad was unacceptable to this country?
Unacceptable as the long-term ruler of the country. But we did not say that we are in Syria now to remove Assad. That's not stated U.S. policy.
Okay, Greg, thank you. Okay, now we're going to go to, by the way, I want to give that number, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go now to Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a very straightforward question that comes right out of what the gentleman just said about... anyway, isn't in the international community shooting down a government's plane, isn't that considered an act of war?
In most cases, that would be absolutely correct. But
why isn't that?
Okay.
Whoa, Kath, hold on a second. Yeah. Let him answer.
Okay. In this particular situation, we have been working for 2 years with the Russians, as the proxy for the Syrian Air Force, to develop rules of engagement and a way to disentangle our aircraft so that we don't unnecessarily have an accident shooting one or the other. Part of that is to declare exclusion zones so that if we have U.S. troops on the ground, which we do not want Syrian Air Force bombing our troops, coalition troops, or our Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF troops. And that exclusion zone is, those zones are well known, they're well laid out, they're discussed between the Russian and the U.S. controllers on a daily, hourly basis. And what happened on Sunday was that SU-22 from the Syrian Air Force was over 5 miles inside that exclusion zone and dropped bombs very near where SDF forces were located. And within the rules of engagement that had been established between the U.S. and Russia, it was perfectly within our right to shoot it down.
I wanted to follow up on what Kathy has been asking you about here. So now we have the risk of a war with Russia, do we not?
What we have right now is a risk of combat engagement between our forces and their forces in Syria because we do not have a clear understanding of the mission and objectives of each side because we're no longer talking. And the longer that goes on, the more likely it is that there will be an incident at the tactical level. This needs to be straightened out at least at the operational level. But better than that, it would be at the strategic level. What really concerns me is seeing activities in other theaters now, where we had the incident today with the Syrian fighter coming and flying within 5 feet of our RC-135 in international waters over the Baltic. If we start seeing this in other theaters, then we run a chance for a major expansion.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. All right. Now we'll go 1-800-348-2551 to Mark in Salem. Okay, Mark in Salem, you're on.
Thank you. It seems to me that the democracies are at a disadvantage compared to the governments that are totalitarian, because in a democracy, the regime changes every 4 to 8 years, and our policy is therefore adjusted to the new regime. Whereas in a totalitarian government, if they don't like what we have, they could say, well, China's included, we've been here 2,000 years, we can wait 8 more years and get what we want out of the next president or the next prime minister. And it seems that that's our one thing, that we don't have a consistent policy that goes over from one administration to the next to the next. They wait for us to change governments, and then they just work on that. They're using our own government to their advantage by having. What does your guest have to say about that kind of a problem?
Well, I would agree with you that our adversaries do take advantage of our system. On the other hand, I'd much rather live in a democratic system than in a totalitarian system.
Well, me too. I'm saying is that they're playing the long game because they know they're going to be, say in China's case, their policies are going to be in place for as long as they want them to. Because the people are not electing them. And so we have, every time they say, well, we don't like this one, we'll just wait until we get someone we do like or we can speak with. And so we don't have the staying power, I guess it is, because of our changing all the time.
Well, sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's not. During the Cold War, a war that lasted over 40 years, you saw an admirable example of both of our parties maintaining pretty much the same policy towards the Soviet Union, and it was successful in the end.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that, I think, is what we're seeing right now. I think we are right now in a position where President Trump is being challenged pretty much for the first time by external events. I don't think Trump wants to stay in Syria, but I don't know that it's in his nature to be able to say, I'm going to get up and leave. We're seeing something similar in Afghanistan, where the military has been given pretty much carte blanche by Trump to increase the number of troops there. Essentially ceding civilian control. So, you know, your point that every 4 years we get a new administration, I think is well taken. And I guess my point would be right now we're in a very serious stage of that. And I should note that we're in that stage with a pretty dysfunctional national security system. You know, we have some good folks on the National Security Council, McMaster as National Security Advisor, Mattis, Tillerson. But the problem is most of the folks there are military. And the old saying, when your only tool is a hammer, every job looks like a nail. And I'm just afraid that our national security system, frankly, does not have enough representation of the diplomatic tool.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Okay, now, there we have several people on the phone. We have several emails. Let me give you one. Alan and Guest, was just said by a guest that our goal in Syria isn't regime change. Why then were we funding the Free Syrian Army, whose goal was explicitly regime change?
Well, to say that we're not supporting regime change, what I mean by that is that U.S. military forces in country are not there to affect regime change. Military forces are there with a very limited role, and that is to destroy ISIS. As far as U.S. policy writ large, we've said a number of times that we don't see a long-term role for Assad in Syria.
Okay. And good. Another letter from John in Cairo. Good afternoon, Alan and Jim. Do you think that the President Trump's idea of giving his military commanders a free hand is part of what's creating these unfriendly strikes and encounters in the heat of the moment, and knowing they have the weapons seems dangerous to me with an unlevel-headed commander-in-chief leaving the decisions to them? A great show today, and thank you.
That kind of picks up on one of the points I was making. We have a long tradition of civilian control of the military in this country to set strategy, to identify the leaders, to set force levels. And in Afghanistan, we're seeing the president walk away from that and give that to the military. I don't agree with that. I think that is a mistake. And it's not clear to what extent the military will be the one setting the rules of engagement within Syria and in the reaction to the Russian initiatives.
Peter writes in, says, disrupted Putin's ideal world. This is his topic sentence. Putin's ideal world. Disrupted Europe, weakened America, cowed neighbors, unassailable domestic power. He's working on all of it.
He is working on all that, and he's doing pretty well. He has consolidated power internally. He's able to use successes overseas to rally support for himself at home. His work with the Syrians and the Iranians is guaranteeing Russia a major role in the Middle East. The covert action against the U.S. elections and against the Europeans is going swimmingly.
Okay. And then finally, and we're going to take a break from Josh, and then we'll talk to Bill and Alan and Lee. Afternoon, the public and media are quick to criticize the CIA for missteps. Rarely do we take a step back and thank the CIA and the FBI for preventing any significant terrorist act on the U.S. since 9/11. This is not a small feat. I would like to thank the speaker for his service and keeping my family and the country safe since 9/11. That's from Josh.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from The Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting Spring Awakening, the musical, a local cast and creative team, Wednesday, June 21st through Sunday, June 25th, theegremontbarn.com. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Stammel String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows, restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stammelstring.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org.
Of course, we are talking with Dr. Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University at Albany, Schools Coordinator for Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, Emergency Management, served in the CIA from 72 to 2005, focusing on Soviet defense and economic issues. And he was in the 1990s. He served in the State Department as Special Advisor to the Ambassador at Large for Russia and the former Soviet states. Okay, Jim. So we have three people we want to get on right away. If anybody wants to get on, now's the time. Don't wait. 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Bill in Albany. All right, Bill, you're on.
Hey, Bill. Hello, Dr. Steiner. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill.
Good. I'm a retired military officer with some DOD experience, and I always thought that a strong NATO was much more important to international security than a strong European Union. But the situation in Turkey leaves me a lot to wonder about. Our ally, a NATO member, is not showing all the earmarks of someone who should be qualified for either EU admission or relied upon so much for NATO. He's aligned himself more with the extreme Islamist point of view, and he's fighting our allies, the Kurds.
So you're talking about Erdogan, right? Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Erdogan. So I'm just wondering, and Putin is trying to make nice with him, and he seems to be receiving those overtures. So from the perspective of international security, what's your take on Turkey?
Bill, I think you bring up some excellent points. Turkey played a very interesting role over the past 30 years. The last 10 or 15 years of the Cold War, we could hold Turkey up as an example of what we ideally wanted secular Muslim countries to look like. Despite their continuing problems with the Greeks over Cyprus, Turkey was pretty fully integrated, as you know, into NATO. They came to the meetings. They were a pretty good ally. During that time period, one of the major problems in our relationship with the Turks was the way they were treating the Kurds. Brutal is too kind a term, and that in effect has just gotten worse. As you know, Erdogan has shown his true colors. They are not as nearly as closely aligned with our preferences, especially when it comes to the Kurds. The Kurds have been our most reliable partners in Iraq and now in Syria as well. I don't think there's any secret that at the end of the day what the Kurds would like to see is a unified Kurdistan, initially probably just within Iraq or break away from Iraq. I understand there might even be a vote on that in the Kurdish sections of Iraq in September. Then, of course, they would try to add the Kurds from northern Syria. And then you can imagine where the Turks will be with regard to concern over the Kurds and trying to bring in the Kurdish population within Turkey. This has made it difficult for Turkey. It would be difficult for Turkey even if it weren't for Erdogan. But what Erdogan has done since the failed coup has moved him more and more into a non-democratic camp. And, you know, how long are we going to be able to have our base in Incirlik? I'm not clear, but I think you put your finger on probably one of the most complex parts of the equation there.
Bill, thank you. Okay, now we'll go to, yes, Alan on the road, if he's still there. Alan on the road, you're
there.
Yeah,
I'm here. Hello there.
Go.
Hello there. As your previous caller was, I too am a retired former defense person working as a communications intelligence specialist for NSA. And I have come to find the viewpoints and appraisals of Professor Emeritus Stephen Cohen of Princeton and NYU, his appraisals of the Soviet Union and Putin to be very logical, very persuasive. And I wonder what the viewpoint of your guest is.
Okay,
about
Alan, from this Alan, yeah. Alan to Alan, I need to know what Cohen's point of view is because, frankly, I don't know. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought perhaps your guest would know, though.
Well, why don't you summarize it for us?
Basically, Professor Cohen says that Putin's behavior has been completely rational and predictable in view of the increasing encroachment by the West on the perimeter of what had been the Soviet Union, putting missile sites in the Baltic countries and in Poland, and so Putin's reactions in Ukraine, et cetera, are completely rational in light of all that.
Okay, doctor?
Well, you know, if you want to accept that Russia should dominate its neighbors because they formally directly controlled them under the communist system, then, you know, I would agree with it being rational, a rational approach to do that. But I don't think that's where we are at. We push democracy. We push free markets. And to do that, we have worked with the former Warsaw Pact countries that were subjugated by the Soviet Union. So I guess what I'm saying is it all depends on the premise that you're coming in with. I never said Putin was irrational. I said he was an intelligence officer and a Soviet loyalist. If you accept that, then what he's doing is rational.
Alan, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to here. Lee in Ulster. Okay, Lee in Ulster, you're on.
No, I want to begin by saying I can't tell you how grateful I am to be able to ask a question in such esteemed company. This has been a great show. Basically, my question to your guest is, to what degree do you think that this escalation in so many theaters has to do with the fact that these governments now see the current administration as provocable, or Trump as provocable?
Well, that's a very good question. My personal view is that Trump sometimes plays checkers while the opponents are playing chess. Let me give you a concrete example. When Trump was in Saudi Arabia, he let the Saudis convince him to be fully supportive of their efforts to denigrate Qatar. That's a long-standing rivalry between the Saudis and the Qataris. I'm not trying to say that Qatar hasn't supported extremists. It has, but hey, guess what? So have the Saudis in the past. And then Trump rushes out and supports the Saudi initiative to isolate Qatar. I'm not sure he even knows that we have a huge air base in Qatar, that we have 10,000 troops there, that our entire air war in that theater is directed out of Qatar. I mean, what Trump did sent his Secretary of Defense Mattis and Tillerson running to do damage control. Now, obviously, you know, the Saudis were delighted, but you can't tell me that other governments in the area didn't look at that and say, oh, my God, look at the naivete here. Right. You know, this is not the sophisticated, nuanced U.S. government response. This is a knee-jerk reaction. And I could see an argument being made that that has led to additional testing.
Lee, thank you for your question.
Controlled?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lee.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Can it be controlled? Will the military be able to keep a cap on this?
I honestly don't know. I do not see an easy way to walk out of what's going on in Syria right now. Certainly the U.S. is not going to buckle under to threats from Russia. At the same time, we are there to destroy ISIS.
So what if Russia shoots down a U.S. plane?
I think all bets are off if Russia shoots down a U.S. plane.
Don't we have to believe that he says he wants to do it?
I don't think that they will shoot down a U.S. plane, because I think they know that the reaction from the U.S. would be massive and immediate in theater. And I mean in theater. We have announced that we have redeployed air assets. What that means is we've got lots of big things flying around very high up that have a lot of very powerful weapons. If someone were to shoot down one of our aircraft, I think there would be an immediate massive response.
Is there a possibility of Russian-U.S. war here?
I don't think so. I don't think it would go beyond theater.
Okay. Lee, thank you. All right, let's go to Jason in West Stockbridge. Okay, Jason, you're on 1-800-348-2551. Go, Jason.
Hello. My question or comment is related to Russian interference or provocations with our military. The recent flyby of the intelligence airplane in the Baltic. I'm just wondering what your take on the difference in their intentions are towards us between the Trump administration and the Obama administration. Are they, is this more or less an effort to discredit the collusion claims in this country between the Trump administration and the Russians? You know, what's the real reason for that to continue happening if they were considering, you know, working together?
Well, I wouldn't put it into that grand a context, I guess, at this point. I come back to what's actually going on in Syria, where the ISIS stronghold of Raqqa is being encircled. Large territory within Syria is now going to essentially go to whoever occupies it at the end of the day. There's some significant energy deposits that are available. I think that what's happening is the Syrian government is trying to retake some of that area. They're being supported by the Iranians, and the Russians have bought in and will support that effort, trying to make life very uncomfortable for the U.S. But I don't think that they're searching for war with the U.S., and I don't think you can easily try to relate this back to collusion. That being said, once you're into the tit-for-tat that we're seeing on the ground now, there's always a danger that something that's tactical will essentially escalate quickly.
So are the Russians, I mean, you said before, and Bonnie called and left a message that Putin was on track. He was doing very well right here. Are the Russians winning right now?
Oh, I think so. I think the Russians, since 2015, when they went back, when they went into Syria, now are able to demonstrate a presence and a major role in a part of the world where they hadn't since the fall of the Soviet Union.
And is that based on the premise that we got involved in a place where we shouldn't have gotten involved?
That's a harder question. That's a policy question, whether the U.S. should be involved at all. You know, you can take this back to 9/11. You can take it back to the invasion of Iraq. You can trace it to later during the Obama period, when we essentially had paralysis by analysis, where folks just couldn't figure out what the right path would be to follow in Syria, and that created a vacuum, and the Russians moved right into that vacuum.
I agree. Okay, thank you, Jason. Okay, very quickly then, because we're running out of time, Howard in New Paltz, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, but you got 1 minute to make the question and half a minute to get an answer.
Okay, this may sound oversimplified, but since Trump is a big businessman, and he had a lot of people in big business with him, corporations, isn't it to his advantage and all corporations that are connected with him to have wars and conflicts going all the time?
I'm not sure I really understand.
No, his question is, there's a military-industrial complex. He is, Trump is a representative of that. He goes to Saudi Arabia. He gives them weapons. Qatar, as you said, he goes there, and to make up with them, he gives them even more weapons. Obviously, the more war, the more we sell weapons.
Well, we do.
Big business,
what?
Big business, dead bodies, that's all it is.
Well, I guess I don't buy into the dominance of the military-industrial complex within the U.S. We did see a military-industrial complex like that in the former Soviet Union that had way too much power. But I just don't see the military-industrial complex in the U.S. having that massive amount of power. That being said, I'm sure Trump does react well to arms sales. Arms sales means jobs, high tech jobs. But I don't see that as a military industrial complex as a dominant power in the U.S.
On that, we disagree. But Howard, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. We're about out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in. I also want to thank Jim Steiner of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy at the University of Albany for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Truth is the Only Safe Ground to Stand Upon, Portraits of Suffragettes by Christine Heller, a centennial celebration, arkellmuseum.org. Coldham and Hardman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture design for resilience and renewability design for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. Elements Hot Tub Spa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good, forever. AGstewardship.org. And thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by the great Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Tomorrow on the show, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin will answer your pet questions. Stay tuned now for a news update.